Well, spring is almost gone, at least here in Louisiana, and summer just around the corner, which means it's time once again for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world, with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS, and our resident entomologist. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite you to call in tonight with your questions about the insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, welcome back for another show.
Well, I've been very anxious to get back, Bill. I was on last month with Cliff, but since then, the insect world has just been just blooming, if I can say that. And so I'm really anxious to hear what some of the callers are having problems with and what they might have noticed good and bad and see what we can't do to get the topic about insects out and about today.
All right. Well, let's start off. Last November, you had sent us an alert, mm-hmm. and it was involving a kind of caterpillar. Now, up north, most of us think caterpillars are harmless, but down here in the Southlands, some of them can be rather nasty. And this was, I forget, it was the pus caterpillar?
Yeah, it was the pus caterpillar. And what I tell people all the time is if you look closely at a caterpillar, you know that there's two categories. There's the smooth ones, and they're pretty much okay to handle if you want to. You can put them in a child's hand. But if they're hairy or spiky, do not mess with them. The pus caterpillar, it looks like it's just covered in fine hairs. And at the base of every hair is a venom gland. And the hairs are designed to break off in the skin, kind of like fiberglass, and inject venom into the skin. And it can cause anywhere from a mild irritation to almost an anaphylactic shock type of reaction. And so if you see a hairy, spiky caterpillar, please, please leave it alone.
And if you'd like to know what one of these little guys looks like, you can go to our website right now, redriverradio.org. Click on the What's Bugging You post, and we have the photo that she had sent us last November when I guess these were on campus and being seen
around.
Yeah,
they're very common on oaks, and we have a lot of live oaks on the right. LSUS campus. And so, and oaks are a predominant tree, you know, along the whole Arklatex listening area. And they don't come about in big swarms. They're kind of quiet behind the scenes, and you may not even recognize it as a caterpillar because it just looks like a little ball of hair that might come off of a cat or something. And they're very, very, very bad. One of the worst cases, a hospital sent me a specimen one time to identify, and a five-year-old girl had picked it up and popped it into her mouth. Ooh. And that sent her to the emergency room right away. Yeah. And so they were treating her symptoms at the best they could.
So that's, you know, kids...
Kids will do that.
You will, yeah, they'll do that. So you need to really, you know, pay attention, especially... is there a season for these? Do they morph into moths or butterflies, or do they continue on?
Yeah, the pus caterpillars, and you won't even be able to even see its head. It's kind of hidden up underneath there, and kind of like it's in its own hoodie. And they will pupate just like any moth or butterfly will, and they are in a certain family, the Megalopidae, and they will actually morph into quite hairy little moths okay. themselves. And so that trend continues through from the larval stage to the adult stage.
Now, are the moths dangerous too?
Not like the caterpillars okay. are. But again, I would take heed in handling them.
So really, this is a defense mechanism to help the larvae, the
sure.
young, basically survive until adulthood, until the breeding stage.
The major predator for caterpillars are birds.
Right.
And then when they come cocoons, then you might have the rodents and the little shrews finding them in the soil. But it is a defense mechanism, and that every prey has to defend themselves against predators, and then every predator has a job to overcome that protective mechanism of the prey. We call it a coevolutionary arms race. One changes, and then the one changes, and that's the way it goes, and it's fascinating to watch.
Sounds familiar. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we are taking your phone calls tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our bug world, both the insect kind or the fiendish kind and the friendly kind and the insect kind, are welcome. And a couple of weeks ago, I was driving around, and I know in Florida, love bug season is torture. It doesn't seem nearly as bad up here, but of course, I was at the gas station and I saw a couple of them floating around and I was about ready to take a country drive. So,
well, last fall, we had a major emergence of love bugs where people were literally having to stop and clean their windshields off if they were driving in more rural areas. And there are two emergent seasons for love bugs here in this in the south, in Zone 8 where we're at, and further south. You have a fall emergence, and then you have a spring emergence. And it seems like the fall emergence is always a little bit heavier than the spring emergence. And I've started noticing these about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And if they were going to be heavy, I would have expected them to explode, especially with the temperatures getting warmer and warmer and warmer.
Right.
And we've had a periodic rains throughout the last 2 weeks. We're not really in a drought. There's no burn advisories going on. And so I'm predicting, I could be wrong, but I'm predicting that we will not see the emergence of love bugs that we saw last fall. But that doesn't guarantee that, and when fall comes, they might be right back into the high numbers. And they're a nuisance, and they're also, they have acidic bodies, so you don't want them to stay on the paint of your car very long. And so hey, I was talking to somebody the other day on how we tend to take nature for granted. You know, we think we live in a bubble where nature can't get to us anymore. And no, you should not let your child go into the, you know, the lion cage.
Right, yeah. And plus, we're just visitors in their world, truthfully.
Oh, absolutely.
They outnumber us.
People are always asking me, when are insects going to take over the world? And of course, the correct answer is they already have.
Yeah. They outlived
the
dinosaurs.
There's more insects than anything else.
You are listening to What's Bugging You, and give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 if you have questions about the insect world, if you have an infestation going on, or if you'd like to find some good, healthy insects for your garden and attract the kinds of insects that we like. Dr. Beverly Burden is here to help you out. Now, speaking of swarming insects, it is also another time for flying insects, both termites and the breeding season for fire ants. And, you know, how do you tell the difference between a swarm? If you're out there and you see a swarm around your house and you freak out and it's just fire ants, you might go out and spend a lot of money on, you know, termite control.
Well, let me give the viewers a couple pieces of advice and that could save you literally hundreds of dollars. Superficially, the reproductive, the winged termites, when they swarm, and when the winged ants swarm, they're going on these mating swarms. And if you can catch a couple, you're going to be looking for two things. One, the length. They have two pairs of wings. You're going to be comparing the length of the front wings to the back wings. If they're almost equal in size, then that's a termite. If the front pair is longer than the second pair, that's an ant. And then also look at the antenna. On termites, the antenna are like Mardi Gras beads. On ants, the antenna are straight, and then they elbow at almost a 85 to 90 degree angle. So look at the antenna, look at the wings. If they're even wings with Mardi Gras bead antenna, call the pest control people out. You got a problem.
Is there anything distinguished about their body, their coloration or anything that can help people? Because it's kind of hard to get up close to a flying
Most of them are very dark-bodied in color.
Okay.
And so you've got to get close enough to look at the wings. And also, the termites will only be swarming in the spring and early summer. Fire ants will continue to swarm throughout the summer and in the early fall. Fire ants always swarm the day after or a few hours after a rain, and once it reaches around mid-70 degree temperatures, they'll swarm every time.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have phone lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, and if you go to our website and click on the post for What's Bugging You Tonight, you're going to see a whole series of photos, and I'm handing Beverly one of these right now, one that I took actually up in Arkansas in the Ozarks, and it's a pretty-looking bug, quite frankly, and it's on this beautiful yellow flower, but I had no idea what that was.
Well, it's a beetle, and the reason I know it's a beetle is because the front wings meet in a straight line down the back. Mm-hmm. And normally you can't see through the beetle's front wings. There are also on this one, if you look at where the ends of the wings are, they kind of split a little bit, kind of like the tails of a tuxedo, if you have a tuxedo with tails. Now, there's three groups of beetles that look somewhat similar. With this beetle, this is called a soldier beetle, and the immatures are predaceous. The adults just feed on pollen and nectar, and they tend to hang out on flowers quite a bit. This particular one is the goldenrod soldier beetle, and you can see the head poking out of the front part of the body. Now, the other type of beetle that's very similar to this is the firefly beetle. And the firefly beetles kind of look like cockroaches in the fact that if you look at them directly from above, you cannot see their head. Mm. It's kind of covered up. I tend to use the hoodie analogy quite a bit. And if you flip them over, you can actually see at the tip of their abdomen, it'll look different. And that's the lighting mechanism that the fireflies use. And then the other group of beetles that look very similar to this, and you need to be able to recognize these because they're a little dangerous themselves, and that is the blister beetles. The blister beetles, you'll be able to see the head just like the soldier beetles, but the area right behind the head will be a little bit narrower, and that split in the coattails of the tuxedo will be much more marketed.
So with the soldier beetle, we really have a good insect in that it's a pollinator.
Yeah, it's a pollinator, and the immatures will feed on deleterious pests of the plants. Everybody likes lightning bugs. And if you don't mess with the blister beetles, they're okay. The biggest harm that blister beetles have is when they get into hay feed for especially horses. Mm-hmm. The chemical they produce is called cantharidin that can cause the blisters, can actually kill a horse.
Oh,
yeah,
that's not good.
That's not good at all
if you're into raising horses.
Yeah,
so.
And horse breeders and horse people that deal with horses, they're fully aware of that.
Right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go to our first call now. Steve from Bernice, Louisiana, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, I've got two questions. And one, I probably should just call LSU, but you're familiar with what a wood duck box looks like, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. On the road where you turn off the main highway to go towards my house, somebody has put up out of the blue two purple boxes with yellow polyethylene line ropes going to them. They strung them up in some water oaks right up over the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming maybe that's LSU trying to catch mosquitoes or something. Or they have put up bat boxes before around at Corny Lake, but I've never seen anything like this on this road, kind of out in the middle of nowhere, you know?
Yeah. It's hard for me to picture in my mind's eye what you're saying, and I'm trying to think. One of the things that they're monitoring for is something that Bill and I have talked about a lot of times, and that is the emerald ash borer traps. But they also may be looking for some other moth traps as well. Moths are attracted to the color yellow, and wasps are attracted to the color yellow. So it may be something along those lines.
The box is purple, and they strung them up right up over the blacktop road. Over the limbs of the water oak.
Do you have any wildlife specialists like game wardens you can talk to about that?
I probably do. I probably should have just called LSU or something because these are LSU colors. That's why I'm thinking LSU, but I don't know.
Would an extension agent know?
Yeah, an extension agent should know. They know what's going on in their area.
Right.
But without having to see them. You had a second question, Steve?
Yeah, the second question is about stink bugs, what I call squash bugs.
Uh-huh.
They seem to love mulberries, and there's always a lot of them in my mulberry tree. And this year we don't have many mulberries. I don't know if the weather was wrong or what. We keep having dead limbs in the mulberry tree. Are they spreading some kind of disease, or what is that the deal there?
The thing about stink bugs, for the people that may not realize what you and I know, Steve, is that stink bugs, their body is shaped kind of like a triangle, with the back of it being the point of the triangle, and then they have very broad shoulders. And you have two groups of stink bugs. One group that feeds on other insects, so they're predators of other insects, and then the other group that actually do feed on plant tissues. And most of the time, they will feed on the fruit because they have piercing, sucking mouth parts, a lot like a mosquito does. So they're basically either sucking the sap out of the tree, or they're sucking all the good juices and the sugars out of the fruit. And they can spread viral disease. They can spread some bacterial disease. But if you're telling me that your tree has kind of been in a steady decline, there might be something else going on there. And what parish do you live in? Do you live in Texas, Louisiana?
Claiborne Parish, Louisiana.
Yeah. There's a guy by the name of Kilpatrick, and I can't think of his first name right now. I think it's Steve, but he's a forest extension agent, and I'd get him out there to look at your trees. Because one of the things they do is they will take a good healthy twig, and they will take a good sharp pocket knife, and they will cut it in two. And if it has a dark ring around where the sugars and the water flow, that's oftentimes very indicative of a bacterial disease. And there may be something that you can just pour around the roots and kill that with, but you have to be able to identify it first.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have phone lines open right now at 800-552-8502. All lines are open right now. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, are welcome. And right now, we're going to go to another picture that we have up on our website, another one that I took here recently. This was a very up close. It was a macro shot that I was trying, a new lens, and it was taken very up close on an azalea bush. And it is a bee of some kind. But I'm not sure why. And it's also pollen colored, it looks like, or mm-hmm. pollen covered up on the front port of the front part of the body, which I thought was interesting because, I happened to catch him when he was just coated in pollen right now.
Well, first of all, let's talk about bees versus wasp. Wasps tend to be very smooth on their exoskeleton. Bees tend to be very hairy. And they're on the part where the legs and the wings are attached, oftentimes there are these yellow hairs, and that's basically what you're seeing here, Bill. What's really, really cool is if you happen to see a honeybee or other bee, they actually have this special place on their hind leg called a corbicula, which they stuff the little pollen pellet in there, and they don't. They'll get pollen in their hairs, but they really want to make that pollen pellet because it condenses it. The most common bees that people see around here are the honeybees, but there are other smaller bees that they may not be able to recognize. There's something that's called sweat bees. They're solitary. They don't mm-hmm. live in colonies. They tend to be very metallic in color. There's other bees that we call the adrenid bees. And the only way to tell, there's about five different little bee families, and the only way to tell the difference between them is to take them to an entomologist, because we have to look at the patterns of their wing venations, and we have to look at other sutures on their head in order to distinguish them apart. And then, of course, the other two bees are the bumblebees, and the bumblebees will have a very big, robust bee, and they will have a yellow rear end, where the carpenter bees will have a dark-colored rear end. And either way, most bees are very, very beneficial to the ecosystem as pollinators and sometimes even as predators against the bad insects. But One of my other favorite types of bees are the leaf cutting bees, and we get calls about these from time to time. Well, they'll see a bee cutting parts of leaves off, and then shoving them down a little tube, whether it's artificial or natural made, and then they'll make that into their little nest, the leaf cutting bees. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different kinds of bees out there. And they're all very, very important to the part of the ecosystem.
So again, this one on our website is a...
It looks more like a honeybee to me than right. anything else.
I just thought...
It's about the right size, it's about the right shape, it's the right color.
I thought with all the pollen on it, that was a good example of how they actually pass pollen on from flower to flower.
Yeah.
Catching it on their hairs. And then carrying it to the next flower, and that's their function in our natural world.
But they're also robbing the flower of their nectar.
It's
a trade-off, you know. It's a mutualistic relationship.
Yeah, symbiotic mostly, but not necessarily detrimental. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. Please give us a call at 800-552-8502 if you have a question about our insect world. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to William from Bossier City. William, what's bugging you tonight?
I'm wondering, what's the most dangerous insect in the world?
Okay, I can answer that for you, William. The most dangerous insect in the world is the mosquito. The mosquitoes transmit diseases, and mosquitoes have been known to kill more human beings than all the wars put together. And I'm glad you asked that question, William, because right now is the time of the year where we need to be very conscious about protecting ourselves from mosquitoes. Here in the Arklatex area, in the Red River Listening View area, we have the West Nile virus that can be transmitted. We have the Zika virus that can be transmitted. The chikungunya virus, and also other types of encephalitis. The West Nile virus is an encephalitis, means that it attacks the central nervous system. And what I want to share with you, William, and what I want to share with the other people is you have to remember the five D's. Drain all standing water around your house. Try not to go out at dusk and dawn. If you do, you need to dress appropriately in long sleeves and pants so the mosquitoes can't bite you. You have to defend yourself by maybe wearing an anti-insect repellent. And then you have to make sure that all your doors are sealed so that mosquitoes can't come inside the house with you. And so mosquitoes, when they bite you, they do two things. They suck your blood out. And by the way, it's only the female mosquito that feeds on the blood meal. And the other thing the female mosquito does when she's sucking your blood out is she's also injecting her saliva into you. And that saliva can contain viruses, and that saliva can contain bacteria. And so you have to protect yourself. But the most dangerous insect in the world, hands down, the mosquito that lives right in your backyard.
Sound good, William? Thank you, William, for calling in. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call right now. All lines are open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We'll go on to another photograph on our website. If you go to redriverradio.org and click on the post for What's Bugging You, you're going to see a whole series of photographs on there after the pus caterpillar. Just scroll down. And this one he was on our front door the side door to the building this morning as I was walking in, and he just decided to pose for me. He didn't move, didn't budge, didn't flap his wings or anything, so I grabbed a couple of pictures of him. And he's actually a rather colorful striking looking insect.
Absolutely. Just like with the love bugs, we'll have two cycles of these, one in the spring and then the other one in the fall. They look like a very large mosquito. In fact, a lot of folks around here call them mosquito hawks, but they're not mosquitoes, nor are they hawks, nor do they eat mosquitoes. They're actually, in the insect world, among entomologists, they're known as crane flies. And the adults are completely harmless. They don't bite. And they just feed on decaying vegetation if they feed on anything. And then the larvae also feed on decaying vegetation. So the larvae are actually recyclers in the ecosystem. And so these are actually very, very beneficial insects to have. And yet sometimes they can be in large enough numbers to where they might freak you out and they become a nuisance and nobody wants, everybody may get the heebie-jeebies when they start crawling on them or something. But a good insect to know and to respect.
They have the weirdest flight pattern because they'll just sit there bobbing up and down, and it looks almost like their gyroscope just went out and they don't know where to fly to.
Well, actually, this picture you took actually is really, really cool looking, Bill, because the one thing about the true flies, they only have one pair of wings, where almost all other flies that we would call flies, like wasps and bees, most anything else that flies will have two pairs of wings, but true flies... like house flies and crane flies, mosquitoes and midges, they only have one pair of wings. But if you look closely at this photograph, you'll see these two things sticking out behind the first pair of wings. They kind of look like lollipops, and they're called halteres, and they help the mosquito hawk to maintain its balance at flight. In fact, I don't want to say that, but there's been some research done, and if you remove those, then they lose their balance in flight.
Okay, so that is their gyroscope.
That is their gyroscope.
It looks like it's not working to me when they fly around my door at night, because they're always, we've got a light near my door,
and
they're always just bobbing around.
And the other cool thing about those, as well as the things that people around here call daddy long legs, are their legs are designed to break off. They have six legs. It's okay if they lose one or two and escape a predator. They can still fly. Hmm. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I wish I had that. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Bennett from Shreveport. You're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Hello, doctor.
Hey.
I would like to know if crustaceans are related to insects, because they kind of look the same. And I've always wondered that. Like a lobster kind of looks like an insect to me. So
yeah.
There's the mud bug.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question, Bennett. There is a group of organisms that biologists call arthropods, and it includes three major groups: the insects that have six legs and sometimes can fly, the crustaceans, lobsters and shrimp and mud bugs, and if you look at them, they have two pair of antennae, where insects only have one pair of antennae, but they have both swimming legs and walking legs, so they can have up to 10 pairs of legs. Now, what's really cool is that insects and crustaceans can occupy, both of them can occupy fresh water, but it's only the crustaceans that can occupy salt water, where you have your lobsters and your shrimp. Insects can't tolerate salt water. Now, they can live in the estuaries where there's brackish, briny water. And then the third group are the ones that do not have any antenna, but they have eight legs, and that's the spiders. And so you have the spiders, the crustaceans, the insects, and then a few outliers like your millipedes and centipedes. And so those are the three group of arthropods. And the main thing that they have in common is they have hard exoskeletons for the most part, and their appendages are jointed. In fact, arthropods means jointed feet. Did that answer your question, Bennett?
It does, very much so. Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have phone lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. I'll probably get run out of the state, but mud bugs always just remind me of tiny little rock lobsters. I mean, they just looked exactly like little lobsters to me. Just quite not packing quite as much meat in the back end. So, well, give us a call right now, folks. We go next to, I hope I pronounced this right, is it Soho from Bossier City? You're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you? Did I get your name right?
Hey, of course, it's Sojo.
Sojo, okay.
Yeah, good try, though.
Yeah, well, I messed it up, but I did it proper.
All right. Well, this is my initial question. What plants are preferred at deterring mosquitoes to settle, I guess, within a certain range? And is there a trade-off that's less attractive to other insects while repelling mosquitoes?
Well, there's a difference between repelling mosquitoes and then just having a bunch of smells in the air so the mosquito can't smell you, okay? And one of the things that we know are repellent are in two different plant groups. One are the citrus oils, and that's why we buy citronella candles, because it's giving off a very pungent smell that basically blocks the mosquitoes from being able to smell you. You know, if you've ever put like Vicks Vapor Rub on your upper lip, you can't smell anything else but Vicks Vapor Rub. And then the other category of plants that are oftentimes will act as a cover up or a repellent to mosquitoes are pepper plants. And by this one, I basically mean the black peppercorn pepper plants, not the jalapenos or the green peppers. And then if you could grow them in this country, which I don't think you can, but I'm sure there's somebody going to call and tell me that you can, and that's fine because I get educated that way too, are eucalyptus oil plants. Any kind of plants that produce a smell that's oil-based, we call those terpenoids in the chemical industry. And so those would be the main three as far as insect repellents. The citrus oils, the eucalyptus oils, even perhaps even some cinnamon oil, and then, of course, the pepper oils.
Okay, a great explanation and great answer. I appreciate it.
Thank you. But I have to follow up saying that covers up the smells. An actual repellent are the black pepper. There's a compound that's derived from the black pepper called pepperdine. And then, of course, you have the DEET, the diethyl tolamide. And you just have to be careful and follow directions when you're applying that, especially to small children.
Okay, understood. Great answer again.
Thanks for your call, Sojo.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And you can give us a call. We have phone lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go to another photograph that I have up online, and I've already got the answer on this one. This was a difficult one to actually try to photograph because, you know what? They don't like to sit still for very long. And this is a beautiful fat bee I believe, the carpenter bee family, is it not?
It is the carpenter bee family, and you can always tell the carpenter bees from the bumblebees because the carpenter bees will have a big black rear end, where the bumblebees will have a yellow rear end. And you do have to be careful if you have carpenter bees in the area, because the reason they're called carpenter bees is they have these very strong mandibles, and just like a drill, they can draw a perfectly circle hole right through wood that you're using as timbers. On my patio, I used to have a problem with them at the beginning. And so they can be in such large numbers, they can cause some structural concerns. And what they're doing is that they're basically making little nursery tunnels. They'll make these tunnels, and they'll lay an egg, and then they'll block that off, and then they'll lay another egg and block that off, and they'll keep right going. Now, these are not aggressive. And they do not, they will sting, but what I do on my back patio, I have an old badminton racket, and I just knock them down, and then I use what we call physical control. You know, I stomp on them. A lot of people don't want to do that, and so they entomb them. They'll wait until they go into one of these holes, and then they'll get a nice soft dowel stick that's about approximately that hole, shove it in there, and, you know, dowel wood is so soft. You can just take a regular pair of tin snips or a little a tool that you would use to prune plants with and just snip it in two. And I don't see any difference in that, but that's okay. That's just me.
Now, I had walked up into a middle of a swarm of these that was around a redbud tree, and they didn't bother me at all. One of them buzzed my ear once, but yeah, they were not aggressive at all.
They don't care. They're just going about their business, yeah, collecting pollen.
And they did a fine job because they were all over that redbud tree. Now, do they nest in trees?
Bees either nest in trees or other artificial structures, or sometimes they will nest in the ground. Mm-hmm. And you got me on that one, Bill. I don't want to say that they'll nest in one way or the other because it's not on the tip of my brain.
Right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can give us a call here right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now. We go next to Kenny from Joshua, Texas. Kenny, what's bugging you tonight?
I have three concerns. Sorry if I'm going to take up too much time. I have a shop that is absolutely infested with dirt daubers. They make nests the size of your head, and they don't seem to be too aggressive. Are they something I should worry about?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about dirt daubers at all, except for the fact that sometimes their little nest get up in such numbers that it may be kind of unsightly.
Yeah.
And, it just doesn't look have a clean line to it. But what people don't realize about their biology, Kenny, if you'll just give me a few moments to leadway here, is if you were to take a small hammer or the end of a screwdriver or something and tap into that, and their saliva and the grains of soil can be as hard as cement sometimes. Yeah. It's just amazing, the structural integrity of those. And what you will find in there are living spiders. And each dirt dauber will collect certain different types of spiders. And so what they're doing is something right out of Hollywood, the old 1950s horror films. And what they're doing is they're collecting spiders, and they seal them up in a little mud chamber. But before they completely seal the mud chamber, they'll lay an egg on the spider. The egg will hatch and literally eat the spider alive until it kills the spider, and then it will emerge as an adult. And different dirt daubers make different types of different architects, if you will, different architectural style of their little nest. So, if you don't want spiders around your shop, hey, they're doing great. If you don't like the aesthetics of it, then shoo them away, take water hose, blow them down, but be careful, because one time I was tapping on a nest one time, and I didn't realize I was so far underneath it. The next thing I know, I had living spiders falling down on top of my head, which I can handle, but most people would just run down the street screaming at that point. What's your other two questions, Kenny?
I got to say, that's probably one of the coolest things I've ever heard. And now that you say it, I don't think I've ever seen a spider around that shop.
There you go.
Another thing is I have this... you said it yourself, straight out of Hollywood. It looks like these ant lions have just like made a ring around an entire fire ant hill out by my shop, and it's insane. That's really the only fire ant hill that I have. It's about 6 or 7 inches tall, and I don't ever see fire ants anywhere, but.
You're talking about the ant lion nest. You're talking about those little conical holes.
The little cones.
Yeah, cones, conical holes.
They're all the way around the anthill.
I would love it if you took a picture of that and sent it to me.
Is there by any chance that y'all could, I guess we're live on the air, so I can't really give you my phone number. There's probably...
Let me give you my email address, because it's public. My email address is my name, Beverly.Burton. Uh-huh. So it's Beverly.Burton at LSUS.edu.
And Burden is spelled B-U-D-E-N.
B-U-R-D-E-N. Yeah. And, and that would make perfect sense because a lot of people don't see the immatures of antlions. And then when they do see the adult antlions, they think they're damselflies instead of adult antlions. But the immatures will make these...
I've dug a couple up.
When I was a little kid...
Like a tick with like a long face.
Yeah,
it does. And if you look at them real close, they always run backwards. We used to call them doodle bugs. And what they're doing, they have these huge mandibles, and that's why you think they look like ticks. And an ant will fall down in the hole, in the conical hole, and when it gets down to the bottom, they will literally take each mandible and inject and stab it on both sides of the ant's body, suck its blood out, and then throw it back up out of the cone. And so what better way to take your prey when you're right at the foot of an ant mound? And then they will pupate, and then they'll emerge. And they do look like damselflies because they have these very elongate bodies, and they have these elongate wings. But the key thing that you can tell the difference that they're not damselflies is that they will have noticeable antenna. You cannot see the noticeable antenna of damselflies, but you can of antlion adult flies.
Huh.
Number three, what you got, Kenny?
Okay, so do hornets play any, crucial role in the ecosystem? Because if they do, I feel really bad. Because I was fortunate enough to be blessed with the immunity to hornet and wasp and bee and all that sort of thing. I don't have any reaction to it. I got lit up by about 40 of them the other day, and I went and grabbed my weed eater and just stuck it over their hole and let them come out and get decimated.
I have two answers to that, Kenny. One is that, yes, there are some people... Okay, three. One, there are some people that will go into anaphylactic shock, and they will react very severely to the venom of wasp and hornets. However, the second part is, do they play an integral part of the ecosystem? Every biologist will tell you that every living organism plays an integral part of an ecosystem. That's just the way it is. However, if you take out one or two hornets' nests, you are not endangering or threatening the hornet population. I mean, you're just defending your territory. They will find some other place that is not competitive against humans to survive. So it's okay if you kick them off your property, but they do play an integral part of the ecosystem because they're major predators. And they're major predators of basically other insects, especially caterpillars and grubs and things like that.
Things that eat your plants.
Yeah. But it's going to be okay, Ken. If you take out a couple, they will survive. Insects will always survive.
I really doubt that nest is going to relocate.
Excuse me? Hello?
He said he doubted that nest would relocate.
I probably so, you know, and so they're gone, but there's others out there that will come along and take its place, you know.
All right, Kenny. Okay, I think
he's
we
gone.
Lost him. And, well, thanks for the questions, Kenny, and you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have Ben from Dry Prong on hold right now. Ben, please hang on the line. I've got one more photograph to show Dr. Burden. And my initial assessment of this was that it was a monarch butterfly, but you informed me it was a different kind of butterfly.
Yeah, this is what we call a tiger swallowtail. Swallowtails are some of the largest, the most showiest butterflies that we have here in North America and also in the tropics as well. One of the largest butterflies in the world is in the same family, Papilionidae, as the tiger swallowtail. We also have the black-tailed swallowtail that likes pipe-buying things to eat them. And we also have other types of swallowtails. And you can tell a swallowtail, you can't see it on this photograph, but on their hind wings, they'll have these little extensions.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, those will be tattered and torn because that bird will try to grab them.
Right.
And they'll that's the only thing that they can grab onto. Now, the larvae of these will feed on plants where the adults are feeding on nectar. And around here, they'll feed on birch trees and poplar trees, but a lot of other plants as well. And the cool thing about the caterpillars of swallowtails is if they are threatened, they have these two structures that are held within their head. And if they're threatened, they'll force air into there and they'll blow up and they'll have this terrible stink about them. And they're called osmotariums. And that will deter birds from coming along and eating them. And plus, if you're looking at something to eat and all of a sudden these two big spikes come blowing out of his head, who wants to eat that anyway?
Right. Well, maybe a spike-eating bug. You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
Give us a call, 800-552-8502. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have phone lines open. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Ben from Dry Prong. Ben, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you?
Hello, ma'am. Millipedes.
Yeah.
Not now. A couple of years back, 2 years in a row, me and my neighbor about 500 yards from me had a run on millipedes.
Yep.
Summertime. Little black ones, light color stripe down the side of them, and there were billions of them.
Mm-hmm.
Go outside at night and walk around, it would stink.
Mm-hmm.
Flip something over during the daytime, and there would just be mats of them. They'd get up in the edges of my shop. And during the summertime, to get in the shade, get up in the rafters and stuff to get away. Haven't seen any of them in a couple of years. And for 2 years, they were everywhere.
That
do they run in cycles like that for some reason?
They do. They do. And somebody's going to call and say, how do I know if it's a millipede or not? Well, millipedes have lots and lots of legs, but centipedes have lots and lots of legs, too. Millipedes have four legs per segment, where centipedes only have two legs per segment. And centipedes are flat, millipedes are round, and millipedes are just scavengers. And when they die, they curl up into a little circular ball, and or a little circle, and they're nuisances. They don't really harm you, but the weird thing that millipedes can do is they can do something that we call reflex bleeding. Through their joints, they can force a little oozy liquid out that will stink more than the worst stink bug ever. And try not to handle millipedes because that once that stink gets on your hands, you cannot wash it off. It basically just has to wear off. And so I would just get me a big shop vac out there and just sweep them up every day. And just, you know, they go in those cycles like that.
That 2 years is the only time I've seen them, noticed them in the 17 years I've been here.
They'll do that. And I don't know if anybody ever has an explanation for them. You know, just like some trees on any given year. So sometimes they'll produce so many acorns, there's no way all those acorns can germinate. There's no way all those acorns can be eaten by the squirrels. And you just walk across the grass and you just crush in acorns. And there is a term for that for plants. It's called masting. But for millipedes, and they're one of the worst groups of doing that. And like I said, they're just nuisance as long as you don't pick them up and get that smelly stuff on their hands. Now, centipedes have fangs, and they're predators, so don't be messing with centipedes. They're very flat, and they kind of run in an S shape, and they can put some pretty good hurt on you if they inject their venom into you. So,
okay, can I ask you one more strange thing?
Sure.
Okay, trying to get some bugs out of my food.
Oh, now, God.
Yeah.
In your pantry?
No. I collect wild mushrooms.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, like February, March, when the spring run on, like, oysters.
Uh-huh.
And, chicken of the woods and stuff like that. When they first come out, you don't have a problem with them then because it's too cold. The late run, and from this time on up to, like, November, when your chanterelles and your shiitakes, how the heck do I get the bugs out of them? Because I'll get little beetles into them.
Yeah.
I tried dipping them in hot water, you know, right before I cook them, but...
Try soaking them in a little bit of salt water. Because they will not like that salt, and they'll start crawling out.
Okay.
The hot, that's just going to irritate them and make them crawl back further in. But a little salt water, you know, just, you know, you're from... you know,
dry prong. Yeah.
You know how we salt the crawfish before we cook them.
Mm-hmm.
Do the same thing with that. And I've never done it personally, but I've read about it. And so that would be my advice to you, is to soak them a little bit in some not heavily briny water, but just enough to make them angry that they want to crawl out of there.
I'll give it a try.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank you. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call right now. We have phone lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. You had mentioned the emerald ash borer a little earlier. Where are we at on that infestation down in this area?
It's not good, Bill. I knew it was going to come up tonight, and so I pulled up there's actually a website, emeraldashborer.info, I think it is, and it has crossed over the Mississippi all the way north. Almost all the states that border the western side of the Mississippi, mm-hmm. they're infected, and the state the furthest west that's infected with emerald ash borers are Colorado.
Wow.
And so they are marching across the United States. Now, the big question is, can they cross over the Rockies?
Right.
But here's the problem. And Cliff Shackelford will tell you, too, the problem is people hauling firewood
right.
from one place to another place. Human beings are transporting them. And so there's certain areas that have to be quarantined so they can protect themselves from the emerald ash borer. And that's the only way that we're going to stop their expansion westward, in my belief. Now, they haven't gotten up to Maine yet,
yeah.
but they are in other parts of Canada.
Hmm.
And so I'm not sure what the explanation of that is.
And they are an invasive species, are they not?
Yes.
Where are they originally from?
Asia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of these invasive species come primarily through trade, you know, through shipping
yep.
and the like from Asia. We've had, some from Africa, obviously, but we've had a number of infestations.
And from South America, because,
yeah.
you know, that's the way the currents of the ocean run. That's why we call them the trade winds.
Right, yep.
You know, they go clockwise. They go America and then, actually counterclockwise, and then back to Europe and then back again. And it's just, that's not true, but we have a lot more invasive species than people realize that we have.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And I think we lost Clarence. Clarence, if you get a chance, call back at 800-552-8502. But we have Sharon online now. Sharon from Shreveport, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi. I am trying to identify a beetle. I'm kind of an amateur insect collector. And I found this beetle that I've never seen before, and I can't find any information on it on any of my books. It's like pale green, and it's about the size of a thumbnail, and it has kind of like a pointy face or pointy shaped head.
Yeah, it's a weevil. Yeah,
it's
a weevil. I've seen them too. We get them in the collection from time to time. And here's the crazy thing, Sharon, about weevils, is some of them only have a short, and when you say that pointy head, it's actually their mouth parts that are extended out from their face. So at the very end of that pointy part are their little mandibles that they chew with.
Cool.
And if you look at them close enough, right as this little pointy thing, as you call it, we call it a rostrum in the beetle world, in the insect world, right when it comes out of the head, or maybe even further down, you'll see these elbow-shaped antenna on it. And just Google pale green weevils, and it'll come up. I'm not sure what the host plant is, but I can tell you this, Sharon, weevils are, as far as any of the beetles at all concerned, are the most host specific. They're all plant feeders, and that's why we have more species of weevils than we do any other family of beetles. You got the rose weevil, the corn weevil, the oak weevil, the pecan weevil, but what I tell people is to fear no weevil.
Yeah, I found it on my sunflowers that were sprouting, so they're the same color, and it blended right in. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, weevils are fascinating. Little critters. They happen to be one of my favorites just because morphologically they're just so fascinating. And of course, the weevil that changed the history of the United States was the boll weevil.
Right.
And that's a whole another story. And You know, at one point, it's been vandalized now, but at one point in Enterprise, Alabama, they had a statue with the goddess holding a boll weevil up to the sky because the boll weevil made them change and diversify their crops, or else they would have all gone under and gone dirt poor. Uh-huh. And that's when they started growing sweet potatoes and peanuts and things like that. Because at the time, everybody in the South was growing cotton.
Right.
Good question.
That's
cool. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, there are amateur coleopterist societies out there. If you research them, it's a really, there's a lot of people that follow beetles, that collect beetles.
Oh, that's cool. I'll have to look into something like that. I've let my whole yard, like, I don't mow my yard anymore. I have, like, vines everywhere. I'm trying to entice as many insects as possible to come into my yard.
As long as the neighbors don't mind, you know. Sometimes you get in trouble with the neighbors, though. I know, because someone told me at my house they didn't even realize anybody lived there.
Thank you, Sharon. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Bird. We have all lines open right now and a few minutes left. If you'd like to give us a call, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. In the meantime, let's go to the idea of gardening and what insects are most favorable to a good, healthy garden. What do we need in a garden if you're growing various vegetables at this time of year from the insect world? What will help that garden bloom and grow? What are the predator insects that will take care of the aphids and the other things that actually destroy your your garden?
Well, there's the classic ones, like the lady beetles. And because both the adults and the immatures will feed on aphids. Praying mantids are very fierce predators. And all the spiders are going to be predators. Those are the three main ones that come to mind. But also, you have to realize that I use insecticide, but don't just use it to be using it. Only use it when you need to be using it, because when you use insecticide, it's actually more harmful to the beneficial pest than it is to the pest. And so, and the pest will resurge more.
All right, we've got one more call online. I don't have a name for this person, but you're on with Dr. Burden. What's your question tonight?
Okay, my name's David.
Hey, David.
My question is about ticks.
Uh-huh.
I found one on me the other day, and I haven't had one on me since I was a child. And everyone I talk to say, "Oh, you better get to the doctor. You know, those things do awful things to you." Well, I got it out, and I got the head out, and it left a nice little red pimple, with just a little red around the edge of the of it. But it hasn't. I haven't gotten sick yet, and that's been over a week ago. So
yeah.
I guess I'm in the clear, maybe.
Yeah, you are. You are. And let me say, I'm not an MD. I'm a PhD. But if it was a tick that was going to actually transmit a disease, you would probably know it by now, especially if it was going to be transmitting the most common one, which is the Lyme disease, because you would be having a rash by now. And that's just the body's natural way of saying something was embedded in me that I didn't like, and it was your immune system saying, don't let that happen again.
Quickly, what's the quickest and best way to get a tick off of you without leaving its head in?
The worst thing you can do is squeeze the body of the tick and inject all the tick goodness into your skin.
Yeah.
You want to get a nice, sharp, skinny pair of tweezers and get as close to the skin as you can and just apply gentle pressure and gentle pressure and gentle pressure until you just ease it out.
So you hear a lot of things like put fingernail polish on it and other things.
Fingernail polish will just make it angry and it'll regurgitate up in the wound.
Oh, okay. So you don't want that then.
you don't want tick vomit in your wound.
Right. Well, Dr. Burden, thank you very much for joining us again this month. And we look forward to seeing you later in this summer as the insects are really swarming around
next month.
Yes.
Good.
You are listening, or you've been listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden. She is our resident entomologist, and she's an associate professor of biology at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. We'd like to thank everybody for calling tonight. What's Bugging You is made possible by Red River Radio and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Next Tuesday, we have the Better Picture coming up, and then on June 19th, we have Bird Calls coming up. That's the next show of that, and this Thursday is Health Matters, of course. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Beverly Burden, with assistance tonight from Wally Derleth, Tim Schnell, Henry Edwards. Dr. Burden is our resident entomologist, as I'd said, and I'm your host, Bill Beckett. This has been a production of Red River Radio, your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS. This is KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Magnolia, and KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches.